Please welcome our speaker tonight. We have Jerry all the way from Wilkes-Barre.
Hey, Jerry.
I'm Jerry. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Jerry.
I'm one of those alcoholics who recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body the big book talks about by becoming awake to God's grace, staying awake by being sponsorable, by being committed to the home group, being available for when Alcoholics Anonymous calls upon me, no matter what it is, because it saved my life. So, you will experience strength and hope. See, I'm going to let you know, my brain doesn't fire like it used to. It's not because of anything else except I had a stroke April 14th. So, you're going to have to bear with me. Sometimes the words don't want to come out. They're in my head. They just don't come. So, but I'm alive, right? Only because I can take direction. I took direction. I surrendered in here. When I got here, I know what the hell they're talking about. I got to surrender. Surrender? What? What do I got to do? So, what I had to do, you know, it says, you know, starting already, right? It says we had to fully concede to our most selves that we were alcoholic. That's the first step in recovery. See, it doesn't, you know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our life's unmanageable. The unmanageability comes from powerlessness, but I had to concede to my innermost self. Admit it, I had to get honest with another man, with the fellowship. I also had to, these lights are bright. Like I'm getting a tan here. Anybody got a tanning lotion? So, I had to get honest. We admitted. But there's more to it than admitting. Because, you know, I used to admit a lot of things. You know, I was a thief. But I kept stealing. Anybody else in here like that? You admit something and keep doing it? What I learned, they told me this is what I had to do. So hold on to that lotion and I just... Dim the lights. It's getting sexy in here. You know what I mean? So, what I had to do, this is what they want me to do. They said, when someone in war, when they surrender, what do they look like? I said, I don't know. I said, well, they sit down. They put their hands up in the air. They get rid of all their weapons. And they wait for someone to tell them what to do. That's what I had to do. What weapons? My minimizing, my addiction. My alcoholism, my humor I use, my manipulations, all those weapons I had to get rid of. I had to be willing to grow along spiritual lines. No matter what, I didn't know what that meant. For real, I didn't know what that meant. So I had to sit down and wait, let them tell me what to do. But what I had to do was I had to accept the spiritual principle of acceptance. I had to accept what I am. I'm a real alcoholic addict. And without help from you guys, I'm going to die. Probably going to die. Or keep getting locked up, which I did for a long time. So I had to pay attention to some other men in my life. And they showed me a lot of love and patience. So that's what I found out. That's what surrender. When I got here, though, I wasn't really too keen on what yous were doing. I didn't want to do this shit. I really didn't. I really didn't want to come to these meetings and, be of service. It's against everything I'm about. I'm about me. You know what I mean? You gotta make coffee, be part of a home group, go to the business meeting. This is some corny stuff here, man. I do not want any of this. But this is what happened. While I was here, I had a bed, I had food, I had a job. I was making $7 an hour bagging cups in Maui Cup. It was honest money. I wasn't hurting anybody. I had to look at that. You know what I mean? And if I left here, there's only two places I go. Homeless or to jail. That's it. Then he told me, you got two alternatives. Bought out the intolerable situation and go on to a bitter end. Right? An alcoholic death or accept spiritual help. I chose to accept spiritual help. Just that simple. So what I did was, they told me, step one, don't even try to go step two to a loving God until you got step one down. I had to surrender, man. I learned what surrender was. I learned that I didn't know nothing about this. And I don't know, and I need help. That's what I need to say. My ego keeps telling me, I know, I want to do it differently. What my ego does is separate me from you and separates me from God. So I had to shut my mouth and know I don't know nothing. Right? So I'm going to tell you exactly where I was at. Any way you stay sober today, you know, it's okay with me. But I know I'm a real alcoholic. I have this obsession of the mind. I wake up in the morning with a thought, oh, I need a drink. In an hour, I'm so obsessed by that thought. Until I get to the drink and drink it, then I set up the physical allergy, the phenomenon of craving. I know what I am today. I know what I am. I'm not a moderate drinker or a hard drinker. You know, I need spiritual help. Whether a person can recover on a non-spiritual basis is determined on the extent you've lost your power of choice. I lost my power of choice once I start. I can't stop. And I do, the book talks about incredible Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde things. I do that stuff. I don't care about you. Only thing I care about is not being sick and stop shaking. That's what I care about. So, this has been a great, the journey that I've been on is like unbelievable. I meet some great people. I mean, my buddy Jimmy C's in the back, a lot of guys, Steve, a lot of people I meet along the way. And, you know, I try to take a little bit of their program with me everywhere I go to make me a better person so I can help guys along the way. So that, you know, Bill talks about what's the solution here. We'll seek our solution on the spiritual as well as the altruistic plane. That's the only solution here. There is no other solution. He says that that's our solution. So what's altruism? Unselfish concern for the welfare of others. I got to help the next drunk coming through the door. That's what I'm supposed to do. In the back of the book, if you look under the religious view, it says Alcoholics Anonymous' process is spiritually a Christian principle that I cannot help myself unless I help somebody else first. Wow. That's coming from like a big holy man. You know, I mean, I can't help myself until I help you. I believe that stuff. It's my experience. So I started helping. You know, I was in meetings saying, I listened to a people, I was like a parrot. Whatever they said, I said. Meeting makers make it. Depends on what you're there for. If you're there, you know, my sponsor tells me, go as a chairperson if he needs help. If there's a guy there with smoke coming out of his ear with that deer in the headlight, look, go up and talk to him. Go help somebody. He never told me go to a meeting. That's so selfish. Go to a meeting for me. He said, go to a meeting and help somebody. So I'm stuck in an altruistic stance for the last 11 years. That's just my story. You don't have to be. If you haven't lost your power of choice, you don't have to be what I am. You don't have to do what I do. But I have to do this to stay sober. It's just such an easy thing. Sponsor some guys, be part of a home group, throw a dollar in the basket, and I get a great life. Wow. Who doesn't want that? Or don't do it and end up in a jail, in a prison cell, bells ringing, standing up and be counted, eating their food, smelling the smells. That's not too appealing, is it? So I do what I'm supposed to do today. I do what I'm told. That's, you know, when I had this stroke, I was at a meeting. And I started getting unbalanced. I made it home. My buddy followed me home. He said, what's wrong with you, man? Do you want to go to hospital? And I said, no. I'm having a stroke, right? And this is what I tell him. I'll sleep it off. I'm alcoholic, man. I'm definitely alcoholic. I'm going to sleep off a stroke, right? Well, check this out. He goes, I pat him on the ass, thanks for coming over. I go to bed, and I get a cramp in my leg so bad. About 2 in the morning, I get up, you know how to straighten it out. I collapsed. I couldn't get up. I couldn't move my right hand. I couldn't talk. I dialed that number, man. I started mumbling on the phone. He knew it was. He came right over and took me to the hospital. And I'm going to tell you what it was, a mini stroke. And it was a warning. As soon as the doctor asked me, he said, do you smoke? I said, yeah. For the last 50 years, I smoked a pack and a half of Lucky Strike. Drink a lot, plenty of coffee lately. He said, them cigarettes are going to kill you. He said, you need to quit. I haven't had a cigarette since April 13th. Only because I can take direction. You know? It's because I can take direction. I know I got to listen to other people. So I haven't had a cigarette. My legs, you know, my strength in my hand came back. I couldn't even sign my name. The speech came back. I have this spiritual advisor. She's a retired mercy nurse. She's a missionary. She can speak fluent Spanish. They have a university, Misericordia, out by me. I took speech therapy and physical therapy there. And I'm better today. You know, so I'm blessed, man. I could have died. You know what I'm saying? It's another drunk. You know what? If I would have died, they'd probably say, oh, did he overdose? Right? No one would have said he had a stroke. You know what I'm saying? I was doing good things with my life. So, came to believe a power greater than me restored me to sanity. Well, these steps weren't that difficult. At first they were. You know what I mean? I keep hearing everybody with this four step. Ooh. Life-changing event, man. I got free. You hear what I'm saying? By a man who knew how to took me through through the resentments, the fears, and the sexual misconduct and harms of others. You know, I absolutely could justify and rationalize anything in my life and blame all of you. Every one of you. Or the judge, or my brothers and sisters, my mother and father, my girl. I could blame them all. But that sponsor that sits with me in a fifth step, that's been around 30 years, he called me a liar. Told me I was full of shit. He said, the truth will set you free. If you ain't free, you don't know the truth. I'm going to tell you some chunks about yourself. He said, I'm a liar, I'm a manipulator, I'm self-centered. It's all about me. I had to take a look at that. Because he loved me. He told me he loved me beforehand. We prayed together. So I had to look at that. And you know what? He was right. Well, so with the 6 and 7, the defects of character. So I read these two paragraphs on 6 and 7, you know, if not, I'm not willing to have these defects, I ask for the willingness till it comes. It's a prayer. Then the 7-step prayer, my creator, I'm not willing, you should have all me good and bad, you know, that's that prayer. That's all it is. The moment I put the drink down, most of my defects that were separating me from you were gone. I wasn't a thief. I wasn't that bad anymore. Trying to get to those things when you don't have money creates a lot of dilemma in your life. People start hating you. They don't even want to see you. You know what I mean? So those are gone. But the ones I'm left with, which I do have some, the chief one, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. I ask for the freedom from the bondage of self. And it pops back in my life all the time. So if anybody in here can get rid of that bondage of self like that, sponsor me. I want to know how, because I can't do it, man. I keep visiting my sponsor and we inventory stuff. It's the only thing that helps me is inventory. So I guess you want to hear about my family life? Huh?
Sure.
Mom was an alcoholic. Dad was a hard drinker. I was the only person out of 9 kids that did other things like that. I have 4 sisters and 4 brothers. 4 younger, 2 brothers and 2 sisters older and the same younger. I was right in the middle. And I come from New York on the Canadian border. I came to Pennsylvania via the Department of Corrections. They transported me. They said I owed them a little something, I guess. So, growing up, I can't really, you know, my mother was an alcoholic. She died of alcoholism. But she did her job, man. She raised 9 kids. How many of you girls could have 9 kids today? Right? 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 Correct? It's a lot of kids, man. She's just in her chair drunk and direct us all. Tell us what to do. For real. So, I'll tell you what, though. We'll never know what her pain was. You know, she wouldn't admit anything. And, you know, I remember I went to service. I used to hang out on the stoop. in my neighborhood, and I hung out with older guys. And I was making money on that stoop. I made more money than my father was. My father was a police officer, and he worked another job on the railroad. And I had such a resentment, because all my little league games, he came to one. I can still remember him walking behind the backstop. I was at bat. I could see the cigarette smoke. I was so pissed. At least I don't know how many. 100 little league games he never came to. It took another member of Alcoholics Anonymous to tell me that man was more interested in putting food on the table. He was working two jobs and take care of his children. He loved it, right? I couldn't see that. It's all about me. Correct? So, I was a good student. I'm not going to say I was a professor or anything. I was good in sports. I hung out with these older guys, not good. But this is what happened in 1968. I'm 64. 1968, I took my first drink. It was Wild Irish Rose. I knocked that whole bottle down, me and my two boys. I threw my guts up. The world was spinning. I swear, I'll never drink again. Just stop it spinning, right? Stop spinning. Next night, I did the same thing. Because I was okay when I was drunk. I wasn't worried about what you were thinking of me. I could talk to the girls. I could dance with the girls, right? I wasn't petrified. I wasn't full of fear. That was the power greater than me. Then, in 1970, I ran into another thing. It's a little stronger than that alcohol I had that day. And I ran with that for a long time. And it took me to places. The book talks about sword and spots on the earth. It took me to really bad places. And so this is what happens. This is what happens. If you don't think it can happen to you, just keep drinking. You know what I mean? Just keep drinking and doing what you do. These young guys, you don't think. I never thought I'd go to prison, but I did. After there's probation, citations, probations, they get sick of it. They get sick of seeing your face in the courtroom. They really do, man. And, my father was getting sick of going with me. You know what I'm saying? So, one day my buddy calls me up. He goes, "We're going to go down to the Hippodrome in downtown Buffalo and shoot some pool. You want to go?" I said, "Sure." So I get in the car. They pick me up. My buddy Donnie and Billy. He says, "We got to stop at this gas station." So we stop at the gas station. He has to see someone. He gets out with a shopping bag. Not good, right? He goes, all of a sudden, I see the cops grab him. They come out of nowhere. This is wintertime. They're on motorcycles, too. Guns are drawn right through the back window. I'm like, what is this guy doing? He just sold some dry goods to this cop, right? They arrested all of us. I had nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with it. But what I did do, I like to gamble. I used to. I had a problem with a gambler in my neighborhood. You know, the local bookie. You know what I'm saying? Them guys. You know, with the big lip with cigar and shit. Right? Right? So, this guy's making threats to my girlfriend and to me. He wants his money. So, that day when they arrested us, I had a loaded 32 in a holster on. Because this guy was saying he was going to do stuff to me. So it was all good. My father's a police officer. This cop's name was O'Connor. I still remember. He said, "Is your father Jack?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Pull over. Let him out." And this young cop goes, "No, everybody's going." I'm saying, "Oh, my God. Please let me go." I start crying. You know? Thought I was a gangster. I was a punk. Right? So he gets up there. They find that gun, man. Those cops, the guy pulled my hair so much. My hair was floating for 5 minutes in the room. It was unbelievable. So, like I said, I got charged with a conspiracy to sell stuff to a police officer. It's not good. So, and with a loaded gun. It doesn't look good, man. It looked like we were trying to stick them up. So, like I said, you go, they get sick of looking at you. This judge looks at me. He didn't even play with me. He gave me 3 years. And outside of Buffalo, there was this place called Attica. That's where I went. I was a young guy, man, going into Attica. That's a crazy place. All the stuff you see in the movies, it's true. They got lines the way you're supposed to walk in there. You can't talk when you're in the hallways. You go to in formation, you go to the yard. Everywhere you go in formation. I was there about 3 months. I went to another place called Ellenville. It's in the Catskills. And it's another Max joint. All guys from New York City. That's another zoo. Another gladiator school. So I'm staying there. I'm getting a real education. So I stay there. It's about a 6.5 hour, 7 hour drive. And my sisters came up. 3 of them came up every weekend. They bring me packages, give me money, and they look out for me. They love me. So I couldn't see it then. I see it now, but so they maxed me out all 3 years. Forget about it. They looked at my jacket and they said, "This kid's kidding. 3 years, that's all he got. He's doing all of it." So I do all of it. I get out. I go back to my stoop. Right there I am. Just in 3 years, I'm right back on the stoop. I'm saying, "Well, the stoop is killing me, man." Right? And my sisters say, "We're going to move you to Pennsylvania. You're going to go live with my brother's father-in-law had a construction company in Prosperity, PA, Washington, PA, outside of Pittsburgh, steel mill construction." So I went down there. This is what my brother did for me. Gave me a trailer, a job, a pickup truck, and a credit card. Took me 20 months to screw that up. Totaled the truck. Went to work when I wanted. When I did go, I was drunk. How long can you put up with that? So they let me go. So this is what I did. It gets good, dude. So let me back up a little. Before all that, I'm on this stoop again. Before I went to jail, and I seen my friends going to college, getting married, getting good jobs. I'm doing the same thing. I'm not doing nothing, really. My emotional growth is stagnated. You know, I make a decision. One of my buddies I grew up with was in the service. I joined the service. Joined the Army, and I opted out for Germany. I went to Berlin, Germany. It's the New York City of Europe. Trust that. And what I found out was I never came home on leave. I took all my leave over there. I could take a duty train from Berlin to Frankfurt. It was free. From there, I could get to Amsterdam in an hour and a half. Oh, man. Come on. Are you kidding me? That's where they make Heineken? 50 cents a guilder for a liter of Heineken. That's where they make it. There's a bar on every corner. It's wild. I'm telling you, man. I couldn't believe I ended up there. I was like, "Thank you." So I wasn't going home. I was going back to that stoop. I was staying there. So, and here's what I noticed. I hung out with this guy, Eddie Liebel. He could speak the Deutsch. His parents were German. And the German, Deutsch, is close to Dutch. So he could speak it. And we're hanging out. And the first time he goes, "What do you notice about this place? Anything yet?" I said, "No, it's all good, man." He said, "No. We've only seen one police officer in uniform. They're all undercover. It's a major port in the North Sea. Everything coming into Europe came through Amsterdam." And what a wild place, man. So I come home after that, and that's how I got into this thing with them guys, and I got arrested. I ended up going to, didn't matter. I was 3 years in the service. It didn't matter. You know, my record was long, and it was stupid. And so, I, like I said, I got out of there. I blew a great job. My brother gave me two dogs, two or goat, that acre and a half of land and a trailer in Prosperity on the West Virginia border. And he was turning me into a hillbilly. I got a bow and stuff, a rifle. Yeah, for real. And I just screwed it all up, man. Alcohol. Not just the alcohol, alcoholism. If it was just alcohol, we'd all be screwed, right? It's alcoholism. And when I'm not drinking, that's when my problems start. My mind is like, I'm out of my mind. And so, this is what I do. My brother says, you can't work here anymore. You know, my father-in-law is so mad you got that truck. I move in with two nursing students. Move in with them. And during the day, I didn't even work, man. They went to school and they worked. I never worked. It was like I had my own stoop in Washington, PA. I was doing what I know how to do. Hustle. That's what I know how to do. I can do it good, right? Manipulate, steal, whatever. Not honest, that's for sure. So, I started running out of money because I drank too much. And, I got this Flag Day 1983, I got this great idea. I got this 22 Magnum. I said, you know what? I'm going to go make a withdrawal from the First Federal Savings. So that's what I did. I went in there, lit up too. Went over the counter, took the money. I got away for 5 days. And I came home one night. And I opened the apartment door of these two girls, and I look in, they're on the couch, they're crying, right? There's feds, state police, and township police. And I said, I got to be in the wrong apartment, sorry. I tried to, you know what I'm saying? They cuff him, they cuff me. Here I go. So, go to court, you know, whatever, how long it was in the county there. It was like, terrible, so. They gave me 6 to 12 years, 5 years for a gun alone. A felony committed with a gun is 5, so automatic 5. So I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, my life is ending quick here, you know? And it didn't even begin yet. So I go to this place. They used to give you a choice. They don't give you a choice anymore with all the escapes. They send you across the state, at least halfway. They gave me a choice of Huntington, Graterford, or Dallas. And I chose Dallas. It was a max joint with a fence. So I get there. I knew people there. And I worked in the school. I helped guys get their GED. And it wasn't a bad job. And then a job opened where a Catholic priest asked me to be his sacristan, take care of his sacristy in his church, and be his clerk. So I took that job. They gave me a pass, signed by the superintendent. I could go on any block I wanted and tell them to kick doors. 23-on-1! You know what I mean? For real! They gave me a pass like that. Are you kidding me? Come on, man. So, I stay there, you know, I get out, and I got out 11 months early for good behavior. And I went to Scranton, a halfway house, state halfway house in Scranton. And I'm going to tell you, I looked out. I got a good job. I got in the Steelworkers Union. I started going to school. And I met this girl from Mountaintop, and, you know, I have all these nieces and nephews. Some of them I don't even know their names right now. Tell you the truth. 100 of them at least. And I love kids, man. You know, my sister's two kids, I used to put on a goalie mask and let them fire pucks at me up against the garage door. You know what I mean? I just loved them. So I wanted to get married. I was the only one out of 9 kids not married. I want to get married. So I want to have some kids. I met this girl. She could produce kids, right? So I married her, and we had 3 beautiful children. And The only thing is, I didn't love her. I'll tell you, I used to wake up with a cold sweat at night, and I'd look over at her and say, oh, my God. No, man. I cannot stay with her for the rest of my life. We argued all the time. She had an eating disorder called bulimia. It was rough, man. So this is what I do, man. I leave. I take my truck and my tools and my clothes. We got a house in Sugar Knots, PA. I leave. You know, self-centered manipulator that I am, I move in with another woman. I got 3 kids at home. Don't care about anybody's feelings except my own. So I move in with this other woman and met her in a gym. And she's very rich. She's her ex-husband was a 4-time Winston Cup champion. And, you know, she would do anything I asked her to do. And I lived in her $1 million house, pool, tennis courts, all that stuff, man. All that didn't make me happy. None of it. The way I lived was unbelievable. I mean, we took a trip once to Las Vegas for 4 days, then to Newport Beach for 5, then to 22 days in Maui. Come on, man. That's like a dream. I stayed drunk for the whole thing. I was so drunk, my eyes were completely red. I mean, no white, it was all red. Visine didn't even work anymore. I'm telling you. So, I remember standing in the pool at the Grand Wailea Resort, standing at the bar, in the pool, having Triple Jackson Sprite. 90 days later, I'm homeless under the South Street Bridge in Wilkes-Barre. Because she had enough. She started going to Al-Anon. She told me, you know, I said, I'm going out. She goes, if you don't come home tonight, it's over. I didn't come home. I came back 3 days later. She says, it's over. I said, she's always saying that. She meant it. I was out. Homeless. So, it happens. And I just said, the hell with it. I want a run like you wouldn't believe. This is what happens to me when I go on runs. I can't tell the truth from the false. I make these decisions that, based on self, which put me in a position to be hurt. Bill Wilson knew what he was talking about. So I have 5 cases in about short time, I don't know exactly, a few months, 5 cases, 5 felony cases, and wasn't paying my child support. All these cops looking for me, guess who gets me? Child support people. They arrest me. And so now I go in front of this judge. They got me. Can't get bail. And they offer me 11 and a half to 23 months in immediate work release. Send me now. I'll go. 11 and a half to 23 months, I'll take it. The only thing being, when I went back, they wouldn't do it then. They wanted to do a pre-sentence investigation. When I went back, that lawyer didn't shut up. It was the same. It was one of the cash for kids judges. And he didn't give me 11 and a half to 23 months. He gave me 11 to 22 years. My knees buckled, man. But I knew what he did to me was dirty, right? So I go to a place called Housedale in the middle of the state. I'm in the law library every day and I'm researching. I find after 2 years, I found the case, U.S. versus Santabello. The way what he did to me, or on record, offered me a county sentence and they didn't give it to the guy. They reversed it. Supreme Court reversed it. So I had about $15,000 in insurance money from my union years ago. I cashed that in, got a lawyer, and he reversed the case. It took him like 4 years, but he reversed it. State Supreme Court in Pennsylvania ordered that judge to bring me back and give me the sentence he promised me. So he takes me back. This is what he does. I got 5 years, 9 months, and 28 days in. He gives me a work release. I mean, he gives me a county sentence. He gives it to me. I got it in 5 times. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, then he goes like this. You seem to do good in structure, Mr. Whoever I am. Anyways, he says, I'm going to structure you up a little bit. You got a year's probation. And I hit my lawyer. I said, Joe, this ain't supposed to be no probate. I don't want no probate. He said, shut up. You're free today. So I was supposed to report the probation the next day. I ain't going. I ain't going. I went drinking. I went and did what we do, man. I was sick of people telling me what to do. So I hook up with a girl, and we run to Florida. So now I've scanned it. Never report. And we're down there. Her father has a heart attack. She's from Boonville, New York. Her father owned a logging company. So we went up there. I worked at her brother's dairy farm. She worked at a dairy farm. The first thing I had to do was get on a bobcat and push all the cow crap out of the barn in the morning. Wow, dude. So that's what I did. Whatever they told me to do. So I was watching a Yankee game one time. I was there about 3 months, I hear. So I get up, I open the door. She's at work. There's two Oneida County sheriffs. I'm saying, oh, my God. He's got a folder, and my picture's in it. He said, is this you? I said, hell no. That ugly son of a bitch? That ain't me. So they had me again, right? They take me back to Luzerne County. They got me for not reporting, right? Leaving my designated area. I go in front of this judge. He makes me do the whole year. The whole year, but he gives me immediate work release. When I, being institutionalized, which I am, I get 2 job status, right? That means I can go out for 2 jobs a day. I went out from I leave at 5 in the morning. I didn't have to be back till 3 in the morning. I broke a record of saving money there. I made windows during the day, and at night I worked at a bar. I was a bar back, closer. In fact, the guy who owned the bar was an NFL player. They called him Big Ugly. He's an offensive lineman. And I did that. So it gets down to the point where I'm maxing this sentence out. And my buddy picked me up the day I maxed out. Case of beer in the bed of his truck on ice. That's what I wanted. So I get out. I had 2 jobs, remember. I quit them both. Quit them both. Got the money. Rented an apartment. Got a little car. And did what we do. I decided, you know, the way they treated me, I should treat myself. So I burned all that up and lost the apartment, rolled the car into Cole Street Park. just like the allergy was like set off and like unbelievable. I couldn't stop. And I knew I was homeless again. I was homeless living. I knew every cut in Wilkes-Barre, every abandonment. I lived in a Murray building when I could, under the South Street Bridge. I just knew it was a matter of time, and I was going to go away again, because I knew I was going to do some incredibly stupid shit, trying to steal something, and I was going to get caught. Because when I'm drunk and lit up, doing stuff I do, I get caught. Handcuffs are right behind me. So I'm coming out of the Murray building one morning, and I get up to Curry Donuts on Pennsylvania Avenue. I look in the mirror, and I didn't even know who this guy was, my reflection. I had long hair, a beard. I had on this overcoat. I take a size 10 shoe. I had a size 14 Timberland. When I walked, I go, you know that sound, right? That's how I look, man. And I still thought my ego was still kicked. Oh, I was trying to hustle women in downtown Wilkes-Barre, looking the way I stuck. You know what I mean? Hey, how you doing? I'm here. Go away, right? So, unbelievable, man. So, I said a simple prayer that day. Wasn't in anger. It was out of desperation. I said, either take me or do something with me. Next day I went to, it was April 1st, 2007. I went to rehab. So prayer's our answer. And that's where my journey began. And through that, I came to AA once and I never left. That's how grateful I am. I do what I do because it's in my heart to help other guys. I have sober houses today. So they gave me a scholarship to King's College. Notre Dame priest gave me a scholarship because I knew the guy that was the president of the college. He was a seminarian at Dallas. I said, Master, he remembered me. And they gave me a scholarship. So I get the bachelor's degree. And now I have this, I'm sober. You know, I'm a crusader, right? With the big book. I beat you with the book if you didn't listen. You know what I mean? And, real spiritual, right? So, they gave me the scholarship. I want to be a substance abuse counselor. I want to be a substance abuse counselor, man. I know I can help people. I know it's meant for me, right? My spiritual advisor, she's an 80, I told her about a spirit, Spanish missionary, 84, she's like 4'11", about 95 pounds. She's the only one on this planet can tell me shut up and I will shut up. She, you know, I remember she's last time, we're having lunch. She said, shut up! So I shut up. She was right. It's always about forgiveness and love with her. So, she's telling me that that's not your calling. Your calling is something else. It's not a substance abuse counselor. So, and I had a couple jobs as a substance abuse counselor, you know, and, I really don't like, I don't even like the mailman's uniform, okay? I don't like anybody telling me what to do. You know what I'm saying? So, I ended up getting a sober house, and, you know, I say that third step prayer, you know, God, I offer myself to thee. To build with me and do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self so I can better do thy will. To build with me. All of a sudden I got 5 sober houses. And I'm helping half the guys I'm not tooting my horn. Half of them come in with no money. Try to get them a shot. You know what I'm saying? And, pretty good. Things worked out pretty good. You know, I had the stroke, but the sober house, that's a young man's game, man. You know, I've been in like 5 fights in my houses. You know what I mean? Guys want to use and live in the house. Be for real. You're leaving. So, I gave up 3 of them. I'm going to tell you the truth. I gave them away. God gave me everything to me. He gave it to me. This girl I sponsored, Katrina, I had a woman's house. I gave it to her. She runs it today. Another guy, Ryan, he was doing well, took direction. I gave it to him. He still has it today. One house I just closed down. I just don't want it. I have 14 guys in 2 houses, and that's all I need to do. In fact, I sold my house. I live in a sober house with them guys. And it's good for me to do that, too. Remember where I came from, because you know sometimes you get a little too big for our shoes. I have arrived. Well, I know without a shadow of a doubt where I go. I'll start running, and it doesn't matter the money I spend and the people I hurt. I'm gonna get until I die. I know that I'm a real alcoholic, and I can't stop. And people who are real alcoholics know what I'm talking about. And the most disheartening thing that I find right now is young guys in AA or young girls, it don't matter, and any victim of delusion, they can rest happiness and satisfaction in our life if they only manage it well. They come to AA, they get a sponsor, the fellowship shows them some love, they get their little job, the flip-top phone, the little Nikes, right? Then Ken and Barbie hook up, they don't come to meetings no more. Ken's looking at Barbie's equipment. You know what I'm saying? They forget what got them there. Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Without a doubt in my mind, it's the strongest fellowship that ever was on this planet. I'm going to tell you a story. I was in a year and a half sober. I was in a car accident. A girl hit me driver's side 60 miles an hour in a cross valley in Wilkes-Barre. I had 6 fractures in my face. From my nose to my ears, titanium. There's a piece in each eye socket. They're giving me morphine every 4 hours. They cut me from ear to ear, flat my face down, and put the titanium in. Don't tickle. Every time I woke up in the hospital, somebody from AA was by my bedside. Someone from AA was doing it. So, 10 years later, I have a stroke. I wake up in the machines. I'm hooked up to the machines. And who's there? With balloons and signs. People from AA. Man, you can't beat that. It's the love of God. It's God's grace, man. The undeserved favor of God. You know what I mean? You just can't. It's unbelievable. So that's how I live today. And it's simple, you know. Trust God, clean house, help others. So what I can offer you is this. The most important word for me in those 12 steps. Where are we? Left or right? Over here. Okay. It's not God. It's not we. It's none of that. It's in the 10th step. It says continue, right? The 10th step. It says continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. It's the bondage of self. That's why Bill's telling you to continue to watch. It's the first action of the 10th step. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, not if, when, they're going to come. We got any angels here? No, I didn't think so. So they crop up. When these crop up, at once we ask God to remove them. That's a prayer. Right? Ask him to remove them. Talk to another human being. Make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. And we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Trust God. Clean health. Help others. It's all through the book. So that's where I'm at. You don't have to be, you might not have to do that. I do. I know how to get my spiritual balance today. You know, that's another thing. They used to say, in a meeting, they talk about balance. I'm saying, what the hell are they talking about? I'm sober. I'm content. That's balance. You know what I mean? But if you're out of whack, you got to inventory that stuff. You got to inventory it. You got to sit down with another person and inventory it. To find out why you're unbalanced, why you're so angry. So, you know, I'm a big book thumper. Like I said, this book and the principles within it saved my life. And there's a lot of this book I love on 164. Bill Wilson says, we only know a little. Bill Wilson wrote the book, we only know a little. God will disclose more to you and us. Ask in your morning meditation, what you can do for the next sick man, the answers will come at your own house in order, but you can't transmit something you don't got. So what the hell is he talking about? He's giving you a suggestion to say the 12-step prayer in your morning meditation. Ask what you can do for the next sick man. Right? Ask what you can do for the next sick man in your morning meditation. The answers will come at your own house in order. So, do that. That Tom Flynn, this guy Tom Flynn from Baltimore, changed my life. Told me, start saying every morning. I met him at Acts of Recovery. He said, start saying, God, show me the way to help some of your kids. And I started saying it. I'm not tooting my horn. Don't get me wrong. Within a couple of weeks, I had 6 commitments, my own, for a couple of years. 6 of them. 3 at the Sally, Clemmer House for Men, KC House, and one with my home group. They were mine. You know what I'm saying? That's what God does for me. And I needed that stuff. I needed that stuff. So, I'll tell you what. I thought working at the Sally, I worked at the Sally too. 62 guys and me at night. Woo! I thought that was the trenches. It's not. I just went to 2 meetings down in Kensington and Somerset at a clubhouse. That's the trenches. There's people on the concrete living. Doing every unspeakable thing, and the cops don't care. They drive by. They don't care. Garbage piled 5 feet high. They don't care, man. Kids, I saw a couple kids riding their bikes. I said, how could your parents let them out, man? People are getting sober down there. We just saw a celebration, and it was so powerful. I could feel the spirit, man. I could feel it in my own heart. I said, wow, this is powerful. These people are getting sober. So, this is my favorite paragraph in the book. It's powerful. You know those 10-step promises? It talks about the problem's been removed. We've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Guess what? You only get those promises if you're doing a 10-step. Just because you go through the steps once, you don't get them for the rest of your life. Ain't happening. You got an inventory, man. Make amends promptly. So, having said that, this is Dr. Bob. It says, if you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what's in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think you're strong enough to beat the game alone, that's your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking liquor for good and all, that's forever. That ain't one day at a time. I live life one day at a time. I quit liquor for all, forever. That's how powerful my God is. But I got to do my part. You want to do it one day at a time? I don't have a problem with it. And sincerely feel that you must have some help. We know we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal, you've been in the habit of when you're getting another drink. One half the enthusiasm. Chase this program, and it never fails. And I thought, you know, when I first read this, I'm saying, he's pretty arrogant. Pretty cocky, you know what I'm saying? But then it was pointed out to me by another big book thumper. This last sentence is what that whole paragraph is about God. It says, your heavenly Father will never let you down. Thanks for listening.